Okay, so that's it. That's it. The government has revealed their roadmap. They've revealed their roadmap for coming out of lockdown. Have you noticed how this word roadmap now is a thing? Everyone's saying roadmap. For days beforehand, all the press was saying is, "Oh, government's going to reveal roadmap for getting out of lockdown." And you know, it was like roadmap, roadmap, roadmap. Every minister was on the television saying, "Oh, well, we're going to reveal our roadmap." And you know what? You know, it was there, and you know, everyone was sitting there saying roadmap. And you know, you all knew, didn't you? You all knew that you know no one was actually interested in the roadmap at all. No one's interested in the details. About, you know, what opens up when. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. After the 12th of April, you'll be able to have funerals for 30 people. Why would you bury 30 people simultaneously? That just seems weird. And, you know, weddings for 30 people as well. And it's like, no, normally there's just two. I don't get the whole why suddenly we've all got to do it in 30s. But anyway, never mind. No one cares about any of those details. It's like there's another one saying, well, after the 12th of April, pubs will reopen and you know you won't have to order a substantial meal and alcohol. And I'm thinking, oh yes you will, I certainly am going to. I'm going out for dinner and I'm getting pissed. It's as simple as that. There's no you don't have to. What am I going to do, go to the pub and not drink? What am I, you know, what's happened? What do you think has happened to me? Have things got that bad? I don't really follow the rest of it. It doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't really matter, because you know there is no need for a roadmap out of this situation, because the only way out of this situation is a straight line between your house and the pub. And what happens after that, you'll be too drunk to know. It doesn't matter. But more to the point is that everyone was saying roadmap. We were all sitting there, we were all waiting. And, you know, frankly, Boris, after he made the first announcement, it didn't matter what he said, right? Because all they were doing is sitting there thinking, when are the kids going back to school? All we were doing was sitting there thinking, okay, roadmap. Oh, yes, roadmap, roadmap, roadmap. But deep down inside, we were going, come on, just when are the kids going back to school? So as soon as he said, yes, after the 8th of March, children back to school, everyone, yay, that was it. And, like, you know, the neighbourhoods were dancing, people were dancing in the streets, everyone was drinking, partying. It wouldn't have mattered what came next. Frankly, it wouldn't matter. And after that, we'll declare the martial law and we'll have show trials in the streets. And Michael Gove and I will come to your house and we'll do a poo on your sofa. Well, no one would care. They were, you know, too busy, you know, kicking the bedroom doors open and saying to their kids, see, 8 kids, 2 weeks to school. 2 weeks back to school. Yeah, yeah, that's right. 2 weeks. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Screw you and Minecraft. And, you know, I just, afterwards, though, after I'd sort of sobered up a bit and they'd gone to bed, you know, I felt sad because I thought, actually, I'm going to miss them. Isn't that weird? I'm actually going to miss their little cherub faces, you know, standing by my desk saying, Daddy, it's 11 o'clock and I haven't had breakfast. Or saying, you know, Daddy, why are you naked from the waist down while you're talking to those people on the Zoom meeting? No, or something fun like that. And, or, you know, you're sitting here and, you know, just as you start that sort of critical meeting with someone over the web, you hear the smoke alarm going off and suddenly the dog's on fire. And all those things, you just, you know, I don't know. I found myself the other day just, you know, standing, watching my son while he slept and thinking, God, they're really adorable, aren't they, when they're still and quiet. And I stood there sort of looking at his sleeping body, and he opened his little eyes. He opened his little eyes and blinked up at me and went, Daddy, why are you standing over my bed with a tape measure? And I went, shh, it's not a bed, son. It's a full-size pool table after the 8th of March. And he said, but where will I sleep, Daddy? And I said, I don't give a f-. You're listening to Lockdown Lemonade with me, Andrew Keith Walker, and I'm a weird, creepy loner who lives in the woods. I'm a writer, that's what we do, yada, yada, yada. Listen, if you're listening to the show, you must have heard the intro by now. If you haven't, do go back and listen to some previous episodes, and you'll get the hang of it. This is all about people sharing their positive lessons from the coronavirus lockdown, because there is a silver lining to everything. And, when life gives you lemons, the saying is, make lemonade. So when life gives you lockdown, make lockdown lemonade. Okay, we've got a jam-packed show for you this week, so we'll get straight on with it. We've got Debbie from LittleBarnCakes.co.uk coming up any minute now with another wacky 1940s recipe, and we're looking forward to that. Plus, we have got a legend of gardening, city slicker turned horticulturalist, Laura Hux is back, Laura Huxtable, and she is going to be giving us some garden tips because the sun has come out. When the sun comes out, we're different people, right? That's great. But first of all, you know, if your children are going back to school on the 8th of March, you might want to fix yourself a cocktail.
Hello, Lockdown Lemonade listeners. This is Lainey Bertino, Andrew's American BFF, here with another cocktail history lesson, culminating in a delicious adult beverage. I've been craving Mai Tais lately, less because of their delicious drinkability, and more because I am dreaming of Hawaii. For those of you who are not aware, the Pacific Northwest of the United States, this time of year is basically Scottish weather. Dark and wet all the time. Usually this time of year, I'm in Hawaii. It's a 5-hour flight from Seattle, has sunshine, palm trees, and the aloha spirit found nowhere else on the planet. But this year we are in lockdown. So instead of lemonade, let's make Mai Tais. Purportedly, the Mai Tai started as a rum cocktail so popular it depleted world rum supplies in the 1940s and 50s. And I have no idea if this is actually true, and I refuse to fact check it because I want to believe it is true. The Mai Tai was arguably invented in 1944 by Victor J. Bergeron, better known as Trader Vic. Was created to showcase the pungent flavor of a 17-year-old J. Ray and nephew Jamaican rum. According to legend, after shaking the concoction with ice and presenting the cocktail to some of his visiting Tahitian friends, they ended up liking it so much, one of them exclaimed, "Ma'ai tai ra'o'ai," which I probably butchered and I'm so sorry, but roughly translates to "out of this world." After the Great Depression, Americans' attraction to Polynesian culture fueled the spread of the tiki trend. A couple of years after the cocktail's invention, the world ran out of the 17-year-old rum Trader Vic used in his recipe. So, he subbed it with a 15-year-old Ray and nephew. But supplies of that even started to dwindle in the mid-50s. So, he created a blend of Jamaican rum and aged molasses-based Martinique rum to emulate the Ray and Nephew. In 2007, the bar at the Merchant Hotel in Belfast, Northern Ireland, achieved notoriety and a 2008 Guinness World Record for selling the most expensive cocktail, a $1,475 featuring Trader Vic's Mai Tai. It had the original 17-year-old Ray and Nephew rum, so apparently wasn't completely sold out after all. In 1953, the Mai Tai made its way to Hawaii and even has a prominent role in Elvis Presley's 1961 movie Blue Hawaii. The original recipe purportedly, and I say purportedly because it was a trade secret, calls for 3/4 part fresh lime juice, 1/2 part orange curacao, 1/4 part orgeat, 1/4 part rich demerara simple syrup, which is a 2-to-1 ratio of water to sugar, and 2 parts aged pot still or blended rum. You can make that, or you can make my perfected recipe. It calls for 1 part overproof rum, 1 part pineapple rum, 1 part silver rum, and for all the rums, I prefer Plantation, which is a Barbadian rum. But if you cannot find that, just substitute your best rums. And also, if you cannot find pineapple rum, and I mean a good pineapple rum, then just substitute a rich gold rum. Following that, 3/4 part Cointreau, 1/2 part fresh lime juice, and it is essential that it is fresh. 1/2 part orange juice, also essential that it is fresh, and 1/2 part orgeat. Now, this is basically, it's an almond syrup, and it can be hard to find. So if it's not possible for you to purchase it, consider making your own because it really changes the profile of the drink. Shake this all over crushed ice, strain, preferably into a tiki glass filled with ice, and garnished with a sprig of mint and an unspent lime shell. Salut!
Hi Lemonaders, hope you're doing well. So I've been enjoying some lovely early spring sunshine and thinking about some jobs I can be doing in the garden this week. Some of the things I'm going to be getting up to, which you guys could as well, are I'm going to go and clean out my greenhouse. I've been very lazy with it and I've left last year's debris and crud on the glass and all the rest of it that needs to be cleaned out. So I'm going to go in there with some bleach to do the glass, make it nice and clean so the sun can get through, and I'm going to take all the old weeds and dead stuff out from last year. And then by doing this, I'm minimizing the chance of pests and diseases causing havoc when I put my baby plants in there. So that's a really important thing that you could be doing if you haven't done that already. And then when your greenhouse is ready, you're going to want something to put in there. So this weekend, I'm going to be sowing my tomato seeds, aubergines, peppers, some sort of, you know, some herbs and that kind of thing. So it's a really good time to be doing that as well. The seed packets that you buy are really useful. They'll help you to know when to sow the seeds, when to plant them outside and all the rest of it. But generally, a lot of stuff starts to be sown around now. So if you haven't got your seeds already, get hold of them. And if you have, start sowing them. Things like tomatoes, aubergines and peppers, they like a bit of heat to get going, to germinate. So you're going to want to keep them inside and somewhere consistently warm to get them going. Now, if you planted your sweet peas in the insides of your toilet rolls last month and they've got going now, it's a good time to start hardening them off and taking them outside, ready to go outside and be planted. And if you didn't have time, you can still plant them now, but you can plant them directly into the soil outside. So that's another little job. If you love your snowdrops and you're trying to extend the colony you've got or build up another area of snowdrops, then you could be lifting up the ones that have finished flowering and actually dividing them and putting some new clumps around so that next year they'll come up and then they'll start to colonise a new area. And the last thing to think about is when you sow your seeds, whether it's vegetables or other plants, flowers, that kind of thing, make sure that when they appear, when they germinate and their leaves appear, that they have enough light, because if they don't, what they're going to do is they're going to go really tall and leggy trying to reach the light, and that makes them a bit spindly and a bit weak. Yeah, so once they've germinated, make sure that the light levels are satisfactory. And I think that's enough for you guys to be getting on with. Enjoy the sunshine.
Bubble Buddy, and all you lockdown lemonaders, it's me, the cake lady, you know, from littlebarncakes.co.uk. So, on to this week's recipe. This week is poor man's goose. I will warn you that this recipe doesn't actually contain goose, mention goose, or any poor men for that matter. So if you've got your pens and paper ready, here we go. 1 pound of potatoes, 1/2 pound of pig's fry or liver. I don't actually know what pig's fry is. If anyone could tell me, I would be grateful. 2 small onions, 1/2 teaspoonful of dried sage, cold water, 1 ounce of flour, 1/2 teaspoonful of salt, and 1/4 teaspoonful of pepper. Here we go. Mix the flour, pepper, and salt together. Cut the meat into pieces of even size and roll them in the seasoned flour. Place these in a pie dish with layers of thinly sliced onion and sage in between. Peel the potatoes, boil in salted water until half cooked. Strain off the water, cut them into thick slices and place over the top of the meat. Three parts fill the dish with water or gravy. Sprinkle any of the seasoned flour over the top, cover with greased paper, and bake in a moderate oven for about an hour. Mmm, lovely. As I say, no poor men or goose mentioned in the recipe. But enjoy anyway. Bye!
So I started when I was really young. I was a sprinter, sort of when I was sort of 13, 14.
Yeah, I never knew that.
Yeah. I've been running for years and years, and also a coach now. But
you coach running.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Is that what you've been? You have been positively supporting me on my running journey. I never really. You mean you're actually coaching me? Oh my God!
Yeah.
Oh my God! That's amazing. I had no idea. Wow.
Yeah, we try to do it so you don't know.
That's the voice of my old friend David Wurzel, and he is an amazing guy. I met him years ago when he was working as a solutions architect at the stationery office, and I was a freelance designer, but he then went on to do amazing things with the Met Office, with the Health and Safety Executive, with the European Parliament, with the Ministry of Justice, with the Department of Health, the European Space Agency, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, and many large cities across the UK. Basically, if you get an alert on your phone or an email alert and it's something from the government, or it's to do with, you know, weather or anything like that, Dave is the guy who made that happen. He's also set up his own company. He's got three at the minute. He's also an advisor for various startups and investor, and generally just an all-round super successful, awesome tech guy who does stuff in the public sector with technology. But we're not here to talk about that because Dave is a massive runner. So how many miles have you run this year so far?
This year I'm just under 300 miles.
300 miles. And
yeah.
it's week like eight of the year.
Something like that, yeah.
So you're much better at maths than me. How many miles a week are you doing?
42.
42 miles a week. Oh, that's got Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy vibe.
It kind of has, yeah, hasn't it? Yeah. So running is the answer to everything.
I've been doing the couch to 5K again, but I started at week three. So I missed the first couple of weeks because that's a bit too light. And I started at week three and it feels like... feels like living hell again. So I know that's got to be good for me, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, running isn't easy. If running is easy, you're probably not running fast enough. So you've got to build your fitness up. And it's one of those things, as you run more, you try harder. So it's always going to be quite tough. But if you take it steady to start with and just sort of build up, one of my tips is to run for time rather than distance. So don't go out and try and run a 5K. Is go out and try and run for 30 minutes.
Now, that is good because I was, when I did the couch to 5K and I was running the 5K, the times were coming down, which meant that I was trying harder so it would be over sooner, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny, actually, because... as a general rule, if you enjoy something, you try and make it last as long as possible, I guess. Whereas, you know, with the running, because I don't enjoy it, it's complete reverse. It's like, Christ, get it over with. 5K, woo! You know.
Yeah, but you're trying to build up to it slowly. So you're trying to run so you're not getting injured, that you're building up that stamina and that fitness. In the early days, you know, just going out and trying to run a 5K is probably the worst thing you can do is, you know, as I said, run for time on feet, walk, run, you know, walk more than you run in the first few weeks. Take it easy. And eventually over time, you flip those over. So you're running more than you're walking. And towards the end of it, you're going to be running the 5K. That's it. It's pretty simple. And having a running buddy, so you say you're running with your wife, is absolutely the right thing to do because you're going to pull yourself along. Running with kids is really annoying because they're just really good at it. So when they're trotting along or running backwards in front of you and in and out of bushes like my son does when we were running when he was younger, it's a nightmare. Where they get their energy from, who knows?
So what I want to know is, when do you find time to do it? I mean, you are undeniably a high-powered businessman, a legend of the programming industry, a legend of public service, digital connectivity, right up at the top of some huge tech companies and development companies. Surely you are in meetings nonstop. How do you get to run 40 miles a week?
Firstly, you've got to make time to do it. So I'm a big fan of getting up early in the morning. So, you know, 6 o'clock alarm, going out, doing a 10K in the morning. It really sets you up for the day.
Yeah.
Again, sometimes if I can't do a morning run, going out in the evenings. And again, it's great thinking time. I think that's one of the beauties of running, is there's not a lot else to do while you're running. So you may as well be thinking. So it isn't lost time. It's the time you think through problems. It's the time you find solutions. I found since I've been doing the running, and certainly for longer, it makes a really big difference in that way.
Yeah.
You can solve so much by getting out of the office and not working all the time.
And do you think it's also mood? Because I find my mood is always better after I've been for a run. It's always worse when I think, oh, no, I'm going for a run. But after I've had it, I'm not glad I've done the run, but I'm glad whatever has happened to me, because, you know, my mood is so much better.
I think so. I mean, it gets all the endorphins going. So you get that runner's high. So again, when you're just starting to get into running, getting that motivation going is really quite difficult. The hardest part of any run is that first step out of the house, and it gets easier as you do it. But you'll find as you sort of start running more and more and more, I now get runner's guilt. So I did a long run on Sunday. I didn't run on Monday and was feeling guilty. It's like, well, probably should have gone for a run today. The weather's been nice. I should have gone. So you get completely the opposite.
It's weird. I never dreamt that we would be having this conversation about running, just on the basis that, you know, I've known you for getting on for a good 20 years, must be.
And the rest probably, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, for sure. Right. So in that time, the thing I've most associated you with in terms of transportation isn't your feet. It's thrashing a Subaru Impreza. Also, you are a Caterham man. You're a track day hero. You love going out and thrashing your motor. What happened? When did you start running? What's happened to the car?
So still have the car. So I've still got the Caterham in the garage. It's kind of been put away for winter and lockdown, so it isn't being used. The two do go kind of together. I mean, if you're doing sort of track days and things like that, so Formula One drivers are amongst the fittest people out there. They do, you know, a lot of exercise and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And Colin Chapman, who invented the Lotus 7 and the Caterham 7, famously said to go faster, add lightness. And I kind of figure, as I'm the heaviest lump in the car, the lighter I am, the faster the car's going to go. So,
what are you going to do? I mean, what's it been like being a track day bandit in lockdown?
Pretty boring, to be honest. I kind of spent a lot of the time just sitting there looking at the car. Certainly in lockdown 3, where you can't really, you know, travel for fun. So you can't really go out and do a, you know, 100-mile route round somewhere or go to a circuit. I mean, everything's been closed and locked down. And it's one of those cars that you're not going to be doing your weekly shop in one of those.
No.
So if you're out and about, you know, it really stands out. So it's just been tucked away in the garage. But hoping 2021, things are going to start to get back to normal and get a chance to use it a bit more. I mean, last summer was annoying. It was a really good summer. It was really sunny and weather was absolutely beautiful, but didn't make as much use of it as I wanted to. But I did run a lot.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, just not as fast. What about, I mean, what do you think? The track's going to be reopening, you know, because there's a lot of track day people who are looking wistfully out of the window, looking over at their garage, thinking about their Lotus Elise or whatever it is, and or their Radical, if they're, you know, serious and, you yeah. know, obviously unhinged. And they're looking out there and thinking, is the track going to open again?
I think so. I think it's going to come back quite quickly. It's also, it's one of those sort of sports activities that is absolutely perfect for social distancing. I mean, if you're within a metre of another car, COVID's the last of your problems, I think.
What has been the toughest thing for you about being locked down? I mean, apart from having to leave the car in the garage.
Homesickness, I would think, because I've been locked down at home for months and I'm absolutely sick of it. But I think travel as well. I did used to travel a lot. I did enjoy doing the travel. And
you were never one of those sort of high-powered businessmen who said, oh, it's not easy, you know, constantly having to be jetting around the place, business class, and staying in fabulous hotels and speaking at conferences. You never complained about that?
Sometimes. It depends on the type of travel that you do. But I always took it as an opportunity to see something or do something new. Yeah. So, you know, if you're flying to – so in January last year, that was my last business trip. I was down in Montevideo in Uruguay. So that was great, having an opportunity to go somewhere I've not been. And even though you're working, you still get to go out in the evenings and see and experience the culture there. So I think you can do that. You know, other trips are less glamorous. I remember going on a trip once to Paris and spending a week in Paris. And all of my friends were saying, oh, that's great. How glamorous. You know, what a fantastic opportunity. I was working in a tractor factory, so it could have been a tractor factory anywhere in the world. I did a day trip to Toronto once, which is great going to Toronto, but doing it as a day trip really isn't that glamorous. But then you can do sort of other places where you go, which don't sound glamorous at all, but can be really, really good. So I've done a lot of work with local government in the UK, and some of the places that you go to that you've never seen before are absolutely amazing.
So tell me about Montevideo, because I have to admit, I've got an idea in my head, and it's like sort of Buenos Aires, but you know, there's mimosas blowing in the street, everyone's partying, drinking mate. You know, what's it like?
It's really good. I mean, it's just over the river from Buenos Aires. I mean, it's a pretty wide river, the River Plate there. but it's very European. So it feels a lot more European than Latin American.
Yeah.
Weather is beautiful. The culture's amazing. The food is really good. And you're quite right. Everyone does sit around drinking mate.
Yeah. Did you get a taste for mate when you were there?
I did have a taste of mate. I wouldn't say I got a taste for it. It's nice, but it's, you know, get back home and have a cup of tetley, I think, is much better.
What has been your lockdown lemonade life lesson that we can all learn if we just listen to your lockdown lemons?
Life has changed, so embrace it. The days of getting up, going to an office, you know, spending hours and hours working, coming home, working. I mean, I've done a lot of work with US organisations, so working late into the evenings. I think what I've learned from this is getting that life balance, is spending more time doing the things that you enjoy. That time can still be productive, so spending it with the family, you know, running, doing those other things, I think that's really good. Spending less time traveling, life overtakes, so you tend to do all of this stuff, but you know, shopping locally, spending time with the neighbours, just generally being kind and respectful to people. I think if there's one thing that comes out of this, that sense of community and being part of something bigger, I think is great.
And as I left Dave, I thought, actually, yeah, he's right, you know, things have changed, and maybe that's the best lockdown lemonade lesson we've had yet, is that we've had to slow down. We've had to find more time to do things, you know, having the kids home, maybe. Because, you know, the one thing about kids is that they don't let you be too serious, right? So you've got to chill out, and you just got to take stuff less seriously, and you've got to find that time, which, of course, you've got, because you're not commuting anymore. So you can connect with your neighbours, and you can see people in a different way, and you can remember that you are part of something bigger. And, you know, I think that's a really positive message. And, you know, in a way, it's a bit like this podcast, yeah, because this is part of something bigger. It's part of a series of podcasts, in fact, called Lockdown Lemonade. And we have a Facebook page here, facebook.com/lockdownlemonade. And, you know, I don't know, if you wanted to be part of something bigger, you could maybe share this. You could use it as a reason to talk to your neighbours. Go on, go around to your neighbour's house now. I mean, obviously, at a safe social distance, of course. Just go around, bang on the door and shout through the letterbox, hey, have you listened to this podcast? And, you know, when they say, sorry, who is this? You say, just listen to this podcast, please. Just, you know, I don't know, just go out in the street. When you see someone and you think, well, they look like they could live in my neighbourhood, just grab them and say, hey, listen, we're part of the same community, listen to my podcast. Please listen to this podcast, not your podcast, my podcast. I don't care about your podcast, Christ. You know what? Just listen to my podcast. Please just listen to my podcast. I'm sorry. I've done it again. I've said too much. What I meant to say is this: just, you know, like my podcast, share my podcast, tell people about my podcast. I lost it. I just really shouldn't have had that Mai Tai. I'm just a mess. I guess what I'm going to say is, please just listen to my podcast and share. I'm sorry. I said too much. I'll go. I'm sorry. I love you. I'm sorry. I love you. Okay. Bye bye. Sorry. No. Seriously, though. I do actually love you. Okay. Bye bye. 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 Oh God, I made it sound weird. Sorry. Bye.